Chapter 29. Cyrene. Never human. A completed vow. She lifted her head at the sound of blades against her door, though of course she saw nothing. Heat came at her in a breathy wave, emanating in her direction from the thudding steel portal. Power weapons, then. They were cutting through with power weapons. Cyrene typed as fast as she could, her fingertips dancing over the familiar keypad, but her efforts ended mid-sentence. The door slammed to the floor, and the thrum of live power armor filled the room. Joints whirred. False fiber bundle muscles purred.
Aquilon, I knew you would come.
Be silent, traitorous whore. The word bearers are gone, and you will answer to the authority of the Emperor. Order your maids to flee, or they will suffer alongside you.
Cyrene inclined her head in a slight nod. The two older women fled the room, barely short of a run.
Brother,
began Calhin, turning to the secondary chamber and the open door leading into it. Another figure had appeared there, doubtless hiding in wait.
The word bearers, it said, are not all gone. You have no place here, Tech Adept,
Aquilon gestured with the point of his sword.
Correct.
Xenu 73 applied an exact amount of pressure on the trigger of the signum control in his left hand, and a massive figure made of gears and armor plating moved into view behind him. It took up the entire door arch as it gave a mechanical growl of warning. Xenu 73 steeled himself to finish speaking.
I have no place here, but he does.
The robot's arms, both mounted with heavy bolter cannons, were preloaded and cycled live. They'd been powered up for hours, ready for this worst of possible moments. Cyrene hurled herself off the bed, seeking all the distance she could put between herself and Aquilon.
For the Legion!
The voice was like steel bars tumbling over rock. The custodes were already moving, their halberds spinning, while Incarnadine opened up at them with a horrendous storm of fire. Argeltal sprinted up the gunship's ramp, his boots clanging all the way into the troop bay. He was the last aboard. The vox was a hive of conflicting voices as the Galvorback snapped at him to hurry. Other Thunderhawks, proud in the Legion's grey, were already lifting off.
Take off,
he ordered the pilot over the vox, unashamed by the threat of panic in his voice.
Get us back to the ship.
Rising Sun shivered as its claws left the parched soil. Argeltal switched vox channels.
Jesmatine, General, are you there?
Distortion.
Answer me, Eric. Lord.
The general was breathless.
Lord, they are loose. We just received the warning. Tell me exactly what has happened.
They landed. The custodes landed. They stormed the monastic deck soon after. Something has enraged them. They must have discovered the truth, though I've no idea how. All Yukar forces there are out of contact or already confirmed dead. One of them is holding the corridor leading to Cyrene's chamber. Blood of the gods, Argeltal. He has a barricade made from the bodies of my men. Every charge sees more cut down. We cannot overwhelm one of them, let alone four.
The word-bearer felt the gunship lurch beneath his feet.
We have started Primus Burn and are en route. What of Xenu 73?
Across the vox, he could hear the snap crack of lasguns barking their payloads, more Yukar engaging in futility.
No word, the elder general replied. Not a damn word. Where the hell are you?
We are on our way.
Realm?
He quested.
Weak.
The link was sluggish and feeble.
Slumber.
The gunship climbed, its engines exhaling smoke and flame, as it left the killing fields far below. Cithran fought as he always fought, in the perfection of silence and solitude. Everything was in motion to an exacting standard. Each twist of the spear haft brought the blade up to block lasfire or down to cut flesh, while each weave and duck was performed with the necessary vigor to keep him unwounded, but never left him overbalanced or needing to reposition himself. His footwork was stoic and rigid only long enough to kill the nearest soldier before blending back into the dance of movement. They fell back again. No, they fled. Behind his faceplate, Cithran smiled. The bolter on his spear juddered with its release, punching explosive shells into the spines of all who were cowardly enough to turn their backs on him. The rhythmic pound of detonation after detonation made an abattoir of the hallway. Cithran went prone behind a mound of the dead, spinning his spear to hold the blade end. A clunk, a click, and the weapon was reloaded. Cithran rose again, already cutting the air with grand sweeps, batting aside the streaking laser fire.
"Sith!" crackled Aquilon's voice. "We move!"
Cithran returned an acknowledgement blip by blinking at the affirmation rune on his retinal display. More Yukar, so very proud in their dull orange fatigues, came charging down the corridor. Cithran leapt his cadaver barricade and met them head-on. They fell in pieces, and beyond a lasburn along his shoulder guard, the blood on his blade was the only evidence he'd even been fighting. The corridor was clear for now, populated by dead fools who'd believed they could bayonet him where their fellows had failed. Cithran looked over his shoulder, in time to see his brothers emerge from the witch's cell. But only two, Nirulus and Aquilon, their armor pitted and cracked by incendiary fire. Perhaps they detected his questioning glance without seeing his face, for Aquilon said,
"Calhyn is dead. We must hurry."
Well did he mark the blood shining on Aquilon's sword point. Xenu 73 sighed. It vocalized from his rebreather mask as an insect's buzzing. The sensory inhibitors lining his nerves like insulating cable around wire were doing all they could, but they failed to entirely mute the pain of shutting down. Shutting down? Dying. In his final mortal moments, he couldn't resist the biological descriptor. Such resonance. Dying. Death. So dramatic. He laughed and made more static-laden buzzing. It became a cough that tasted of spoiled oil. With his one remaining hand, the adept started the laborious task of dragging himself across the floor. A potential subroutine to this task presented itself as he moved. Could he not stop halfway and examine the corpse of the human female? A cost-benefit analysis flickered in his thought core. Yes, he could. But he would not. The subroutine was discarded. His hand clawed at the smooth deck, and he dragged himself another half-meter with a squeal of his metal body along the floor. All the while, functionality statistics formed charts behind his eyes. He realized there was a chance, though small, that he would terminate before he reached his objective. It spurred him on. While the bionic nodules attached to his few remaining mortal organs stimulated the fading flesh with jolts of electrical energy and injections of emergency chemicals. The tech adept was blind by the time he reached his destination. His visual receptors had failed, as blank as a monitor with no power. He felt his hand clank against his intended target and used the motionless bulk to pull himself closer. The fallen robot was a toppled statue, a fallen avatar of the machine god, and Xenu 73 embraced it as one would a beloved son. "There," he murmured, barely hearing his voice as his oral receptors failed next. "Duty done, honored, name inscribed in archive of visionary. Merit." His throat vocalizer failed at the last word, leaving him mute for the remainder of his existence. Xenu 73 expired 23 seconds later as his augmetic organs powered down without hope of restarting. He would have taken no pleasure at all in the irony that his withered organs of meat strove on for half a minute more, still trying to feed life through a body that couldn't process it. The chamber remained still and quiet for only a short while. Booted footfalls soon drummed down the hallway, heralding the arrival of more inhumans. The figure in crimson armor stood in the doorway, framed against the blood-stained wall behind. He waited there without moving, unable to accept what lay before his eyes.
"Let me through," said Zaphon.
Argeltal stopped him with a glare and went inside himself. Xenu 73 lay in embryonic repose, curled fetally beside Incarnadine's cracked and broken shell. The robot was in complete ruin, its armor riven into 100 chopped canyons inflicted by hacking blades. The war machine's banner cloak and oath scrolls were likewise ravaged, reduced to shredded rags. The walls and floor had fared no better. Holes showed through the sides of the armored chamber into adjacent rooms, and where the walls still stood whole, they were cratered by punishing bolter fire. Argaltal noted all of these details in the time it took to blink, and paid no heed thereafter. He knelt by Cyrene's slack form. Blood deepened the red of her gown, the same crimson as his own armour, and painted the floor beneath her. Liquid red flecked her neck and hair. The wound was a blatant one, a great split in her chest where the sword tip had rammed into her. One blow, a heart strike, had been enough to pierce her precious mortality.
Blood.
The presence was still thick and slow, but Argeltal's despondent anger was rousing the demon to wakefulness.
Blood soon. Hunt.
The change was taking hold again. The demon sensed battle, and the flesh they shared began to warp in reaction. Argeltal breathed a bestial rumble, but the sound died in his throat when Cyrene shuddered. She lived. How had he not seen? The faintest, barest rise of her chest betrayed the life that still beat beneath.
Cyrene,
he growled, as much Raum now as Argeltal.
This.
Her voice was a child's whisper, so breathless that it barely made a sound.
This was my nightmare.
Blind eyes found his with unwavering ease.
To be in the dark. To hear a monster breathe.
Claws closed around her frail form with possessive protective strength, but the damage had long since been done. Her blood stung his fingers where it dripped onto them.
What have they done to you?
Cyrene asked with a smile. She died in his arms before he could answer. He heard the voices, but had no reason to pay heed to them. The other, yes, he heeded such chattering. The bleating of humanity, fleshy tongues flopping in moist mouths, and the gusting of lung breath over meat to make a sound in the throat. Yes, the other listened to the voices and replied in kind. Raum did not. He barked a word of hate, drawn from the old tongue, hoping it would silence their nasal noises. It did not. Ignore them. Yes. He had sensed the need for the blood hunt and risen to the fore in a rush of release. The other's body, no, the body they shared, assumed the hunting skin with ease now. He ran, aching with need, pained by the pursuit of prey without catching it. Humans in his way were dashed aside. Raum did not look back. He smelled them die, scenting their lifeblood and brain meat spilling out onto walls and floors. Frail things.
You are killing the crew.
The other was returning. This was good. They were stronger together. The other's silence had been a cause for fear. As he returned, Raum felt his instincts shifting, adapting, made sharper by reason and the concept of past and future. Intellect, not mere cunning. Sentience. Better. He charged down the corridor, roaring at the humans to frighten them aside. As he passed, he did not slay them.
They are allies. They slowed the hunt.
He felt an itching reluctance to confess to his weakness of reason and forethought.
We will kill no more. We are whole.
I am back.
Argeltal drew in a breath, tasting the ship's recycled air with its stale skin tang. Like a thread to be pulled loose, he scented something snagging at the edge of his perception. His friend, Aquilon. That ozone smell of charged weapons, the oils used to maintain the golden armor. He ran on through the hallways, moving past more corpses, ended by blades rather than claws. De Profundis was packed with the dead, with slain Yukar lining the corridors.
You were gone too long. The humans bleat and snort at us.
The vox. Argeltal blinked at the flashing runes.
I am here. Well,
Zaphin sounded as furious as Argeltal felt.
The Emperor's bastard sons have decimated half the Yukar on board. Where are you? I lost control. I have Aquilon sent now. 13th concourse at the port hangar deck.
Argeltal stormed through the great doors onto the gunship bay. The rising sun's aft thrusters flared before him as it roared its way out through the containment field and into the void beyond. Argeltal's scream echoed around the hangar.
Bravo!
Zaphon was shouting.
Bravo!
They run to hide. The prey goes to ground.
They flee us, Argeltal raved across the general channel. They're running to the planet. Balok, Track the rising sun. All batteries, track that ship and fire at will. No,
Zaphon called. Erebus wants them alive.
I do not care what Erebus wants. Send them to the ground in flames.
De Profundis came about in a ponderous arc. Along with most of the Astartes Legion fleet, it had suffered hard in the void battle and was loath to respond to orders now. Signals and firing solutions flew between all nearby word-bearers' vessels, and seven ships let loose with their broadsides, spilling their immensely destructive firepower into space in the hopes of hitting the tiny gunship. Less than a minute after it had blasted its way from De Profundis's hangar bay, the rising sun cut through the atmosphere of Istvan V, its hull aflame and its heat shields glowing molten orange with the stress of a spiraling, rudderless atmospheric re-entry. The capital ship, Dirge Eterna, claimed the kill shot. Argyltal listened to the scramble of conflicting voices over the vox and the fleetmaster's description of the Thunderhawk falling in an uncontrolled descent, but not destroyed outright. There would come a time to dispute the Dirge Eterna's attempt for glory, but that time was not now.
Galvorbach to the assault deck, he ordered. Ready a drop pod.
The gunship lay on its side, the very picture of twisted, miserable metal. Red shards of hull were scattered across the surrounding terrain, while one engine still valiantly coughed, wheezing smoke too oily and black to be healthy thruster emission. For almost 100 meters behind, a furrow was carved into the soil where the Thunderhawk had come down and slid, shuddering, along the ground before ploughing headfirst into the ruins of a city wall. This eroded stone stood as warden around a long-forgotten city, home of a long-dead culture. Chunks of masonry broke off as the gunship smashed to a halt, and old stone rained onto the mangled hull plating, punctuating the abuse with a final insult. The sky lightened over the wreckage as sunrise came to Istvan V. An unremarkable star winked over the horizon, more white than yellow, too distant to offer much warmth. On the other side of the continent, a great funeral pyre still burned. He breathed the cold dawn air through open jaws, tasting burning oil on the wind. His brothers, his crimson kin, hunted around and through the gunship's wreckage, seeking any spoor. Behind them, their drop pod still hissed and creaked as the metal strained in the aftermath of plummeting through the atmosphere.
They have not been down long enough to hide,
Zaphon spoke the words as an assured threat. At his side, Malnor was a twitching, ragged creature that drooled venom. Torgal climbed the gunship, like something grotesquely simian, leaping and hooking into the hull with his bone scythes to haul himself upward. His blinded face jerked to the side as he gave canine snuffs. Argyltal stalked around the gunship's base, his claws folding closed into knuckly fists, then opening again into raptor talons. Like a desert jackal pack, the 11 remaining Galvorbach swarmed the downed Thunderhawk, sniffing out their prey. They did not need to hunt for long.
So at last comes the Crimson Lord.
Aquilon's voice was biting in its insincerity,
revealing his true self to those he has betrayed.
The custodes walked from the shadow of a broken wing, their weapons held in loose hands. Each of them exuded rigid confidence. Their gait was assured, their shoulders back, their armor damaged and dented, but ostensibly whole. The Galvorbach closed in. At the center of the crimson circle, the three golden warriors went back to back. They offered the word-bearers nothing but breastplates emblazoned with the imperial eagle and blades that would only ever rise in the emperor's service. Of the Astartes legions, only one had ever been honored enough to engrave the Aquila upon their armor. The once noble Emperor's children, now a core part of the War Master's Rebellion. But these were Imperial custodians, the Praetorians of the Master of Mankind, and kept their mandate far above such concerns. The custodes wore the Aquila more often than the Primarchs themselves. Each eagle symbol shone on their chests in solid silver, clutching lightning bolts in their claws. Nowhere else in the Imperium were the two symbols of the Emperor's ascension twinned like this, forged into the armor of his chosen guardians. The hunters drew even closer. At their vanguard, Argyltal spared a brief moment's concern for the fact the custodes had not fired upon them. Perhaps they lacked ammunition after the battle aboard the ship. Perhaps they wished to end this cleanly with blades rather than bolters.
"You killed Cyrene,"
he said, the words thickened by spite and the acidic bile stringing between his jaws.
"I executed a traitor who had borne witness to a legion's sins."
Aquilon aimed his sword at Argyltal's warped visage.
"In the name of the Emperor, what are you? You seem more nightmare than man."
"We are the truth," Zaphon barked at the trapped custodes. "We are the Gal Vorbach, the chosen of the gods."
All the while, the word bearers stalked closer. A noose was closing around the custodians.
"Look upon yourselves," Aquilon said in disbelief. "You have cast aside the Emperor's vision of perfection. You have abandoned everything it meant to be human."
"We were never human."
Hissing spit sprayed from Argyltal's jaws as he roared the words.
"We were never human. We were taken from our families to fight the forever war in the name of a thousand lies. Do you believe this truth is easy to bear? Look at us. Look at us. Humanity will embrace the gods, or humanity will embrace oblivion. We have seen the Imperium burn. We have seen the species brought to extinction. We have seen it happen as it happened before. The cycle of life in a galaxy owned by laughing, thirsting gods."
Aquilon's voice held nothing but kindness, and that made it all the crueler.
"My friend, my brother, you have been deceived. The Emperor..."
"The Emperor knows far more than he has ever revealed to you," Zaphon cut in. "The Emperor knows the primordial truth. He has challenged the gods and damned humanity with his hubris. Only through allegiance..."
"Through worship," said Malnor.
"Through faith," said Torgal. "Will mankind endure the endless wars against the tides of blood that will drown our galaxy?"
Aquilon turned to each of the word-bearers as they spoke their piece of the sermon. He looked back to Argyltal at its conclusion.
"Brother," he said again, "you have been most blackly deceived."
"You killed Cyrene."
"And you count this as some unfathomable betrayal?"
Aquilon's laughter was rich and ripe, and to hear it made Argyltal's teeth grind.
"You, who stand out of the Emperor's light, malformed into a monster. You, who binds tortured souls into the walls of your ship with forbidden lore, letting them suck in all psychic sound for 40 years, you accuse me of betrayal."
Even through the demon's rage fogging his thoughts, even through his grief-born anger at Cyrene's murder, his brother's words struck with enough force to wound. Argyltal had walked through that chamber himself many times, and no matter how ardently he hated the necessity of it, he had still allowed its existence. Images assailed him with guilty stabs, each memory knifing into him before he could cast it aside. Zaphon, chanting from the Book of Lorgar as an astropath, shrieked before him. She was being disemboweled, and not quickly, her pain serving as a focus while she was chained to the chamber walls. Colchisian symbols that had been tattooed onto her flesh an hour before still bled freely. The Vitae engines, maintained by an apothecary of the Legion, would keep her alive for many months to come. The demon Zaphon summoned within her would enslave her mind to that most simple of tasks, to draw in and digest any psychic communication from nearby minds. No word would ever reach Terra, but for the falsified reports the word-bearers made themselves. Compliances achieved. The perfect Legion. Lorgar the 17th son, as loyal as any father could hope.
"I accuse you," Zaphon laughed himself, "of being a fool. Your precious astropath has been wailing your suspicions right into the mouths of listening demons for 4 decades. Every time you huddled around him and heard the Emperor's words, you were hearing nothing more than the lies I whispered into a demon's ears."
Argyltal did not add to Zaphon's relish. The chamber was no source of sinister pride for him. He had condemned not one woman to die in agony there, but 61 souls in all. The strain of possession wore the astropaths down with disgusting rapidity. Their degradation was quick, but never merciful. Stinking black cancers ate through their bodies after only a few months. Most faded fast, their minds eroded by the warp's winds, like a cliff suffering in an endless storm. Few ever lasted a year, Soon enough, it was always time to bind another helpless screaming astropath into the life support engines and inflict horrors upon their flesh with ritual blades and burning brands. He considered it part of his penance to watch each binding. Each time he would wait for the moment when the captive's eyes would glaze, not in death, but in surrender. Each time he would watch for that precious second when the demon's consciousness devoured its way to the fore of the victim's mind. The screaming would cease. Silence would resume, blessed in the wake of such sounds. 19 had volunteered. 19 members of the fleet's astropathic choir, nourished by years of Zaphen's sermons, had volunteered for the honor of keeping the Legion's greatest secrets. Curiously, these burned out the fastest, succumbing to biological erosion before those who were unwillingly bound. It seemed suffering was a source of strength in the ritual. Zaphen had noted it and informed Erebus. He received thanks in return, and the rite was amended in the Book of Lorgar. Zaphen had blazed with pride for weeks afterwards. The custodes had found the chamber at the heart of the monastic deck, but someone, somewhere, somehow, had found it first. Aquilon had been led there. Of that Argyltal was certain. He vowed in silence then. Whoever that treasonous soul might be, he would pull it apart and feast upon its flesh.
"We were never human,"
he said the words quietly, not even realizing he spoke them aloud. Raum seized hold in that moment of melancholic anger, and the body they shared broke forward into a run.
"For the Emperor!"
Aquilon cried. The Galvorbach answered with a laughter of demons. In the years to come, Argyltal recalled precious little of the battle. Sometimes he attributed this to Raum's presence in Ascendancy, sometimes he attributed it to his own guilt, seeking to purge the night from his mind. Whatever the truth, any reminiscence left him hollow and worn, at the mercy of fragmented images and half-remembered sounds. It was like thinking back to the moments of earliest childhood, before genetics had shaped his mind with an eidetic memory, when it was a struggle to fill a forgotten time with all five senses and make them feel real. "We were never human." He never forgot those words, nor how they were both true and false, all at once. Malnor. Malnor sometimes rose from the churning mess and resolved with clarity. When had Malnor died? How long had they been fighting? He wasn't sure. Nirilus's blade had hewn the Galvorbach's head clean from his shoulders, but Malnor did not fall. A wraithly image of his helm remained, snarling and shouting in silence. Nirilus, a blade master beyond anything Argyltal had ever seen, had been forced to carve Malnor to pieces to put the warrior down for good. The fight was too frantic and frenetic for sanity to have any place in its motions. Thought and formality vanished, replaced by training and instinct. A blur of blades and claws, the crack of ceramite, the grunts of pain, the smells of spit, of acid, of sweat, of parchment, of bone, of panic, of confidence, of smoky bolter muzzles, of charged blades, of tear salt, of breath, of blood, and blood, and blood. And then, the first kill. Nirilus, the blade master. He killed Malnor, and that left him vulnerable. Torgal and Sikar had leapt onto the custodian's back. Chop! Chop, chop, went the hacking blades, biting into armor joints at the back of the neck and the base of the spine. A life for a life. Nirilus fell. Torgal leapt away to safety. Sikar stayed to feed and earn death himself. Aquilon, the Oculi Imperator. He avenged his brother's slaughter by ending Sikar a heartbeat later with clean, bright sweeps of his sword. Argyltal was on him in that moment. He remembered the leap and the soreness in his throat as he roared once more. He remembered the juicy, meaty crunch as the custodian's head ripped free of its neck. Like a flopping serpent, Aquilon's spine hung down from the dripping helm. A dizzying stench of blood. A maddened laugh that may or may not have been Argyltal at all. He never knew for certain. Six of the Galvorbach still drew breath. Six possessed warriors gave their desert dog cackles and ran for the last custodes with demonic vigor burning in their limbs. And this was the last moment Argyltal could ever recall, until the air was cold again, and it was all over. Cithran pulled his helm free and faced them bareheaded. Instead of waiting with his halberd in hand, he hurled it as a spear. The Galvorbaks scattered, but it still struck home. One of them took the blade in the chest with a crack like a falling tree. The spear pounded through ceramite, bone, and meat with enough force to burst from the word-bearer's back. The Astartes flipped over with the impact, his chest cavity stripped hollow, his lungs and two hearts blasted out of him, reduced to pulped meat on the ground. Cithran had smiled as the other five descended upon him. He considered his vow of silence complete, given the circumstances, and he laughed at the warrior he'd killed.
"I always hated you, Zaphon."